could turn her life round and perhaps be sorry. And I don't know. It's just so awful. It's very difficult to get your head round.
Well, it is awful. And I think everyone that's phoned in so far has understandably been slightly emotional about it. And I quite understand why that is. Let's go to Pamela. Thank you for that. Let's go to Ian, who's in Redhill. Hello, Ian.
Oh, hello, Ian. This is a terrible, terrible day. It really is. I don't have children myself. I'm so shocked at this that like so many other people, I'm sure I'm a bit speechless about it. But what I do know, this is a terrible, terrible day for for the UK justice system. It really is.
I'm trying to think back to when she was sentenced, and it was before my time here on LBC, but I mean, I can remember it, but I don't remember sort of any massive public outrage that she had a minimum term of 5 years, and yet everyone who's phoning into the programme today is horrified that it is only 5 years.
I'll tell you the reason why, Ian. We were all assured, okay, that this was a minimum term, she wouldn't be let out at 5 years.
Mm.
And that no one had to worry, because at the end of 5 years, all that would happen is they would have a review and go, yeah, dream on, love, back you go. That's what we were led to believe would happen. Now,
who are we, Ian, to second guess the parole board? I mean, these are professional people. They presumably know what they're doing.
Oh, they've got degrees. I mean, while I was on hold, I had a quick look to see what you have to be on to be a parole officer and be on a parole board. You have to have a certain amount of experience with convicts. You have to have a degree, study for 3 years, whatever. I mean, come on, Ian. This is a breakdown of our judicial system and makes a mockery of it. And what I would like to just ask is also, this is what happens when a lady allows all of the horrible things that previous caller said to happen. She allowed it to happen. Okay, she didn't do it. She allowed it to happen. That is even worse, in my opinion. And what I do worry about now is these people that are being done for the death of that soldier, Lee Rigby.
The one thing that I would say on what you've just said, Ian, is you would have hoped that some sort of maternal instinct would have kicked in. Danny is in Epping. Danny, hi.
Good afternoon, Ian.
Hi.
I think it's right that she be released. I mean, none of us really know the circumstances of what she's went through. You know, we're not there. We can't be judge, jury and executioner at the same time. I know it's horrific what happened. I mean, I felt bad for baby Peter, and I still feel bad for what happened to him. But, I mean, she's been for the parole board. She's been jailed indefinitely for involvement or allowing it to happen, but not for any involvement in the crime itself. So there's a lot of circumstances we have to look at. And then, I mean, if anybody wants to be blaming somebody, we have to blame our judicial system for it. Because that's just how it works. That's part of the human rights that we have to fall under. And the people who sat in the parole board decided that she is eligible to be paroled. So, I mean, as I said, it's fair and square, her chance. And I can see, you know, she's still lost a child. And I think that she lives with that pain for her forever.
Frankly, Danny, I hope she does.
Well, of course it would.
Because if you ever get over that sort of thing, I mean, what kind of person are you if you think, oh, you can just sort of put it into history and say, oh, well, that happened a long time ago. I'm not emotionally involved in that now. I hope it does live with her forever.
Of course, as I said, Ian, but, I mean, we weren't there. We don't know what circumstances she lived under. Was she threatened herself? Did she not think that maybe it's going to happen that badly? I mean, a lot of these people, if you look at domestic violence itself, look at the statistics of domestic violence. Women that get beaten by men don't speak out.
No, but she was visited 60 times by the authorities. It would have taken just one occasion for her to say something that could have actually saved her baby, and she didn't do that.
I can understand it, but if you look at it now, we are complaining exactly about the same thing, about the failure of the justice system. What would have happened to her if she complained about it? They took those people to prison, or they took them to the police station, and they cautioned them, and they released them. What would have happened to her then? And that is the question we have to ask. I mean, it's easy to point fingers, and it's easy to throw stones at a glass house. But what is the circumstance?
Well, I take your point, Danny, and I'm really glad you've come on and said that, because it contrasts very greatly with all the other callers that we've had. But I don't think many people think that 5 years is long enough for this kind of crime. And you're right. If we've got to complain about anything, it is a judicial system. It's the sentencing guidelines that the judiciary have to operate under. Danny, thank you very much indeed for your call. 0845 6060 973. I think we'll try and take some more of your calls on this after six as well, because a lot of you want to have your say. But in a few minutes' time, we're going to meet one of the legends of LBC. Brian Hayes is back in the studio, ladies and gentlemen, so do stay tuned. It's 5:45. Here are the news headlines with Peter Ferris.
The mother of baby Peter Connolly, who was jailed for a minimum of 5 years in 2009 for causing or allowing her son's death from abuse, is to be released, according to the parole board. The government's confirmed that the newspaper industry's proposals for a royal charter on press regulation have been rejected, and that it'll press ahead with separate plans agreed by the three main political parties. The International Monetary Fund has revised upwards its economic growth forecast for the UK this year by 0.5% to 1.4%. London's weather, sunset is at 6:23, generally cloudy this evening and staying mostly dry. At Wembley Stadium, the temperature's 20 degrees. This is LBC 97.3. The travel is next.
When it comes to replacing your car's headlight bulb, you could ask Rob. Rob's feeling a bit sick today, but he's well enough to fix your car. Unfortunately, he isn't well enough to perform in the pantomime tonight. Can you fill in for him? Thankfully, you've got no plans and you and Rob take the same size tights. Or you could drive directly to Halfords. They'll fit your headlight bulb right there in the car park from £6.99, which is a lot cheaper than a favour from Rob. Halfords. We fit so you don't have to. Exclusions apply.
In the LBC 97.3 Travel Centre, it's J-Louise Knight.
Thank you very much, Ian. Problems out to the east of town. The A127 blocked going eastbound shortly before the M25. In fact, just after Folkes Lane. That's because of an accident. Check in the cameras, seeing queues back towards Gallows Corner. If you're heading out that way, it's worth taking the A12 instead, joining the M25 at Junction 28. Northbound M1, there's just been an accident about halfway between 10 and 11. That is Luton up towards Dunstable. One lane is closed there, but I can see queues on the cameras back through Junction 10 at Luton. M4 down to one lane westbound because of an accident after 8-9 at Maidenhead. That's tailing back towards Junction 7. And White City, Wood Lane, still blocked northbound at Duquesne Road. That's whilst a diesel spillage is cleared. Traffic's having to take it in turns using the southbound lane. Long queues back towards Shepherd's Bush Green. Leighton High Road still blocked by an accident between Church Road and Vicarage Road. And problems on the underground. This just coming in to me. A train has just broken down at King's Cross. As a result, there's no Metropolitan line, Baker Street to Aldgate, and the Hammersmith and City line suspended from Moorgate to Edgware Road. Keeping London moving, your next travel update's in 15 minutes.
This is LBC 97.3.
When a businessman jumps into my cab screaming, "Get me to my meeting in double quick time," I'm tempted to tell him the best way. Go to Meeting by Citrix. Just download their online meeting software and you can meet your clients face-to-face right now. You can even share your screen with them. Try it and see how much time and money you'll save. Now, doesn't one great tip deserve another?
Discover the fast, easy way to online meetings from anywhere. Visit gotomeeting.co.uk for a free 30-day trial.
It's a landlord's nightmare. A tenant that hasn't paid their rent and a long drawn-out court case to get them evicted.
You should have let your property through Alder Martin Baines & Cuthbert. ABC offer a free rent guarantee scheme for landlords across Greater London. It's insurance that pays you any outstanding rent that your tenants won't pay and also gives up to £50,000 of legal cover. Call 0800 888 6688 or visit abc-estates.com. 0800 888 6688.
I was first told I had osteoarthritis 10 years ago. My knees were so painful that my doctor kept increasing the strength of my pills. At the first time the therapist fitted me with the Apos therapy device, I was taken aback. There was no pain in my knees. I can now walk a lot better than when I started.
If, like Judith, you're suffering the agony of knee pain and looking for lasting relief, call Apos Therapy for a free assessment. Apos Therapy is a non-surgical, non-drug and clinically proven treatment for worn, damaged and arthritic knees. With thousands of patients successfully treated, call Apos Therapy for your free assessment on 0800 909 8009 or visit apostherapy.co.uk. Results may vary.
London's biggest conversation, LBC 97.3. And this is what we do every day.
A plane, a jet plane, it sounded like, flew over the apartment building that we live in. It sounded very low.
This wasn't Basra or Baghdad. This was London. Scenes of buildings burning, mobs running through the streets, police corralling and containing rather than addressing.
This is Tony Blair on LBC 97.3. I'm taking your calls, and the next call is from Kate in Holloway.
There was a big hole in the carriage, and there was people lying everywhere, covered in blood, and people screaming help.
More incoming gunfire. Some Argentine batteries around Stanley.
It actually made LBC. The way we were able to cover the Falklands War dazzled everybody.
Nick Ferrari is unprepared, but I am on the ball here, and you're through to Ask Boris on LBC 97.3. Let's take this crate up to 30,000 feet and see what it can do.
Proud to serve London for 40 years. This is LBC 97.3.
It's 10 to 6 here on LBC 97.3. Well, I have a great delight in welcoming Brian Hayes into the studio. It's great to have you back here at LBC, Brian.
Thank you.
You and I have... you used to be the other way around. Me as the pundit and you as the presenter. And I think I learnt more from your style of presenting than probably any other radio presenter. To me, you are a broadcasting legend. I'm absolutely thrilled that you're here today. You started at LBC in 1976. What was it like in those days?
Well, I have to take you back just a couple of years. Not that I was at LBC, but it started in chaos and it remained in chaos for quite a long time. But we've started to have organised chaos. At the beginning, they employed hundreds of people. They were all newspaper people. And dare I say it, they knew nothing about radio. I had been turned down by both LBC and Capital at the beginning, but I knew it wouldn't be long because they would have to sort out what they were going to do with all these hundreds of people. Anyway, I got to Capital Radio, worked there for a couple of years doing things similar to the job I took on here. And we started with a bang, really, because the first guest was the then leader of the opposition, Margaret Thatcher. And that was the kind of... we were setting our stall out, really. This is the kind of show it's going to be. And it was for quite a long time. And it was very hard to keep up, of course. But it was a great challenge, and the people I worked with were great. And you tend to spend most of your time concentrating on your own area and forget that there are programmes before you and after you. And they all had to do the same thing. But I want to say one thing about those years, particularly the 70s. We worked very hard in difficult conditions. It was not a palatial outfit.
This is in Gough Square.
In Gough Square, yes. Lovely address and a lovely area, but you should have seen the basement. and the most important thing is we had lots of fun. We really enjoyed it. Now, I hope I'm speaking for everybody else. I can't understand why anybody wouldn't have had any fun, hard work though it may have been. And we were setting the standard, I think, for what LBC would become and the idea of what it was supposed to be. Now, it did waver over the years quite a lot, as anybody who had an interest in radio will know. We always just felt that something had slipped away. But nevertheless, we did our best, and there it was. And I think maybe it became not as commercially viable as it needed to be, because the previous company, the company that owned it in the first years, I don't think made any kind of profit out of it. They kind of made as much as they spent.
And it's interesting that a lot of the people that were working on LBC in the early days, going right through to the 80s, I suppose, a lot of them are actually in leading positions in broadcasting throughout the country now. People like Martha Carney, John Snow, and lots of names, no doubt, that Jeff Stelling.
Yes.
Wonderful, great guy, I think.
And you can sit watching television, and it doesn't take very long before there's yet another person who started at LBC or IRN. We don't talk much about IRN these days, but I think it's there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It turned out to be quite a formidable news supplier.
You were one of the first people to really bring opinion into radio, because, of course, the BBC has to be strictly impartial, and I often get told sometimes, I can't believe you're not being impartial. Well, I regard my role as being a facilitator. I'll give an opinion and invite people to disagree with it. And you were one of the first radio presenters to really do that, weren't you?
Well, my view, which I started expressing and following, started up the road at Capital. And my policy was that there are two sides at least to everything. Now, I didn't generally put my own point of view across. I said, here it is. You can either think that of it or you can think this of it. Let's talk about it. And the first person who came on said, I think that. And then I would argue that it wasn't that, it was this. And that, I thought, meant that I couldn't be accused of taking a line. It was much more strict in those days, of course, as you probably know. And what's more, I didn't want to. I didn't want to be known by my opinions on politics or indeed anything else. Except maybe smoking.
Do you think it's healthy, though, that a lot of radio presenters now, I mean, people know my background is on the right. I was in Conservative Party politics. Do you think that that's a healthy thing for talk radio, where you've got presenters with definite opinions who aren't afraid to come out with them? Or maybe sometimes that's a disadvantage?
Well, I don't like it much. I think it is better if you've got presenters who are able to argue both sides of the argument and allow both sides of the argument. The trouble is, with your own view, you tend to be a little less patient of the other view. And the other thing, too, is if you end up with a lot of radio stations, a lot of talk radio stations, and a lot of presenters who have similar views, whether from the right or the left, then you start to edge out the other point of view. You know, people say, oh, so-and-so is too left-wing. And if you can say, well, that's not true, because, and then outline the policy and how it works.
Give us a couple of your most memorable moments at LBC.
Well, I think just about every phone-in presenter probably has the story about suddenly finding you're talking to somebody who is in terrible trouble and maybe is threatening to take his or her life.
Yeah, mine was Bill on the M25.
Yeah, well, I had a couple like that, and as I say, most presenters will have had at least one of those. And that is difficult because it tries out everything that you've got. But most memorable, I think, is selfishly enjoying meeting and interviewing some of the people, particularly writers that I admire, politicians too, writers, film directors, people like that. And to interview Joseph Heller, the author of Catch 22, about three times, and several other writers of that calibre, they're the things that I really remember and really enjoyed.
And it's the callers that matter, isn't it?
Of course it is, yes.
I remember sitting many times in the studio with you, listening to you dealing with some callers who, shall we say, you hadn't got a lot of patience with, but you dealt with them incredibly politely, but very firmly, too.
Well, I think that's the important thing, that you've got to be seen, heard to be fair, as well as trenchant. You've got to express whatever the view is in opposition to the caller, no matter what that view is. But on the other hand, people shouldn't be able to go away and saying he was biased. It was only because he thinks that way, because I didn't necessarily. Of course, some things, as I said, with smoking, some things which are not political. You don't mind saying it's a bad thing, you must stop.
Was there a moment at all where you did sort of slightly lose control and become very emotional or sort of lose your temper at all?
I did when, well, I say I did, I might have, on occasions when, say, the the really difficult issue of racism, which people have to deal with today as they did then. When you use reason to try and get out of them why it is they think the way they do, and they can't quite get it, and then you do get a bit impatient, and if you're not careful, you can get emotional as well. And I tried very hard never to. But when I left doing that morning programme, a lot of the calls that came in that day all pointed out that I was not a racist. Well, you know, OK, that's a point of view, but I think that's a moral point of view rather than a political one, even though it becomes political if you put it into that arena.
We've only got 30 seconds left. What future has radio got? I mean, this sort of format of talk radio, it's still in Australia, your home country, there's like 11 talk radio stations in Sydney. We've only got one in London. Why is that?
I don't know. I really have wondered about that myself. Why is there nobody else doing a similar thing so that you've got somebody to aim at down the road? I haven't the faintest idea, but the future of radio is difficult to actually think about, because digitally, what's happening to all the means of communication, all in the air, we've no idea. Newspapers probably don't have much of a future, and part of that is their own fault, of course. Radio will continue to have a future, but probably not in the present form.
Well, video didn't kill the radio star. Brian Hayes, you are indeed a radio star. Thank you so much for joining. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Ian.
This is LBC 97.3.
FM, online and digital radio, London's biggest conversation. This is LBC 97.3.
The 6 o'clock news. Good evening, I'm Peter Ferris. The